What does it take for an independent bookstore to make it these days? The situation looked dire for indie bookstores for several years, with Amazon eating up a huge segment of the bookselling market and big box stores like Borders and Barnes & Noble taking over as shopping destinations. And then Kindle also entered the scene. Between 1995 and 2000, the number of independent bookstores in the U.S. declined by 43%, according to the American Booksellers Association. But the tide has turned. Now indie bookstores are on the rise, and sales are up as well. What are the secrets to success for these small local booksellers? We'll hear from a panel of Maine booksellers about the up-and-coming books they're looking forward to and the classics they can't keep in stock. And of course, we'll want you to share what makes your favorite local bookstore special. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Cindy Hahn, and this is Maine Calling. Despite forecasts of their demise, independent bookstores are not only surviving, some are thriving. Today, we're going to talk about why and how some of Maine's independent booksellers are faring in an age of e-commerce, big box stores, and e-readers. Joining me in our studio is Samantha Haskell. She's the owner of Blue Hill Books. Ari Gerson is owner of Longfellow Books. And Josh Christie is the co-owner of Print, a bookstore. We invite you to join our conversation. Share what makes your local bookstore special. Our phone number is 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Samantha, I just wanted to ask you, you're the new, relatively new owner of Blue Hill Books. Tell us a little bit of your story and how you got to be the owner.
Yeah, so I purchased the store from the couple that started it in Blue Hill in 1986, Nick Sichterman and Mariah Hughes, a little over a year ago. So I've just had finished my first year, which has been great. I started there as an employee in 2007, part-time when I was in college, and then came on full-time as a bookseller in 2010. And then kind of through that, those years, we were discussing the process of Nick and Mariah's retirement and my interest in taking on the business. And, you know, it wasn't something that I initially, when I started working there, thought, oh, this is what I'm set out to do, but it ended up being the perfect thing. So we had a really nice transition, and the community really came out to support that process for me. So
the community really loves that bookstore. So is there a little bit of pressure that you're taking over this institution?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most fulfilling part of our transition was for customers to have that continuity of a familiar face, because I had been at the store for quite a few years before taking it over. So I think that continuity really helped with making the transition pretty seamless.
That's great.
Yeah.
And Josh, you too are relatively new to the bookstore scene here on Maine. You want to tell your story of how Print came about?
Sure. So relatively new to bookstore ownership, but have been a bookseller in Maine for pretty much my whole adult life, now that I think about it. I started at Sherman's Books, which is a family of six family-owned bookstores on the coast of Maine, in 2004 as a part-time summer bookseller and eventually a full-time bookseller and store manager and buyer for them. And that was through about 2013, early 2014. And then I met my business partner, Emily Russo, who was working at first the Odyssey Bookshop in Western Mass and then at the Greenlight Bookstore in Brooklyn, New York. And we got together and started talking and wanted to create a real community-focused progressive bookstore on the east end of Portland, because really there's not a lot of retail anchors, and really there's a great used bookstore, but no new trade independent bookstores on that side of town. So started conceiving of a bookstore that we would run together, came up with the name Print, and opened in November of 2016. So this week will be our year and a half anniversary.
Good. So far so good then.
So far so good.
Good. And Ari, you also have a story to tell, so it's your turn.
Well, I think probably a lot of folks in the Portland area know the story. I mean, Longfellow Books was opened in 2000. It was a bookland before that, which was a chain of bookstores that my father actually ran for many years. And he opened up Longfellow Books when they went through bankruptcy in 2000. Went through a challenging time 4, 5, 6 years ago as my father got ill. He passed away, and my family sat down and had a chat about what do we do? Do we keep this open? Do we not? And closing it just wasn't. It didn't seem to be an option. I was fortunately in a position to assume some ownership roles and some directorial roles, and we have really thrived since then. I wasn't expecting to be in the bookselling industry. I wasn't expecting to live in Maine, truthfully.
And here you are.
And here I am. But it's a very nice story that comes out of, you know, some challenges.
Yeah, I think that for your story and all of yours, it's the typical reaction from somebody saying, "I love that store." And I read a New York Times article leading into this show that talked about how the word beloved always comes up whenever anyone's talking about independent bookstores. Why do you think that indie bookstores engender such passion? What is it about a bookstore as opposed to maybe a shoe store or something like that?
I think bookstores are experiential to a large degree. I don't think it's the only retail experience that is, but I think it is one of the most powerful. I just came down here from the store, and it's President's Day, so the kids are out of school, and it's raining, and there's nothing for people to do. And, you know, there's a brother and sister who are probably 4 and 5 sitting on a beanbag reading a book together while their parents are shopping. And, you know, it's something that impacts family. I think it's something that impacts children growing up. And I think it's something that stays with people. And I think as independent bookstores, sadly started to close over the last 8 or 9 years, it's something that people realize that they missed.
Right. And so you mentioned the fact that there was this downward trend, and everyone thought, okay, Amazon comes along, it's going to knock them out. All these big stores are going to knock out independent bookstores. Kindles and e-readers were supposed to do that, but yet that hasn't happened. So what are some of the reasons that indie bookstores are kind of back in action?
Well, as Ari said, it's so experiential. And also, independent bookstores, by and large, are community-focused. We really want to be parts of the communities that we're in. That comes out in the books that we stock. We, unlike Amazon, we don't stock everything in the sense that they would argue they do, being the everything store. But we try and stock things that really focus back on our community and reflect our community. And also being event-driven, we bring authors and other author and book-centric events into our towns and into our communities.
And how do you tailor it to your specific community or your audience? You know, what goes through your mind as you're saying, oh, this would be a good book for our store in particular?
For our store in particular, it's driven by looking at the personalities of myself and my partner and our employees and seeing if it's something that we're passionate about, we can communicate to our customers. And also, like, we are you know, traditional retailers in the sense that we track sales and can see trends and see what's popular with our readers and the people in our communities. And we try and stay plugged in and watch the news, see what kind of things we think will resonate with people.
Yeah, you have to have your finger on the pulse all the time.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Samantha, you too. I mean, community is a huge thing for your bookstore, right? How do you get involved with the community?
Yeah, well, I mean, just speaking to what Josh and Ari were just saying, I mean, we get a lot of feedback from customers about what they're reading, what they're liking. When customers come in for special orders, you know, more often than not, I'll get a couple copies because I know inevitably somebody else will come in who they've been, you know, talking to about it. And I think that curation aspect is for sure a big part of what makes the experience of buying at an independent store a much different experience than buying online. I think inherently people who get into bookselling are doing it for the love of the place where they are. I think there's, you know, a lot of giving back and kind of reciprocity in those relationships with customers. I'm sure you guys too are involved in, you know, nonprofits and other organizations in your community, so you get a more dynamic interaction with the place and the people that you're serving.
And you are, right? You're involved with the community in other ways.
Yeah, I'm the vice president of our local land trust, the Blue Hill Heritage Trust, which is a great, you know, other avenue to give back, and have been part of the steering committee for the Literary Festival, the Blue Hill Literary Festival, that started last year. So There's a lot of opportunity to get involved.
The other element I was wondering about, especially for, well, actually in Portland as well as where you are, is the tourist industry and how much you're part of that. You're both drawing tourists, but also, you know, do well, right? I mean, is that your big season is when the tourists are here?
Yeah, I mean, for Blue Hill, definitely July and August are the peak months of summer. But our store has really prided itself in having December typically be the busiest month of the year. So that's pretty reflective of people who are there year-round coming out, you know, during the holiday season to support small business, which is great.
Yeah, we've seen the same, that in the past when I started selling books, the busiest months were always being on the coast of Maine, June through August, early September. But now, and at print at least, our busiest month by far is December. But also we see the tourists reflected as well. Our second and third busiest months are July and August.
Then are you catering to them in some ways in what you select and what you put out there?
I don't think tourists specifically, in that as you go into our store, the first thing you see is case facing you as you go in, right to your left, is all Maine authors, which I don't think appeals specifically to tourists, but certainly is something that might grab their attention. And just past that is our staff picks. It's our other big featured thing, which speaks to the import that we put on our staff and being readers and being able to communicate what they love about books to the people that are in the store. And that doesn't really rely on them being from Maine or from away, as we say.
I think that is one thing that people love so much about their local bookstore is those the staff picks and the sort of personalized service and curation. So how do you just constantly read so that you can do that? How do you keep up?
It's a real challenge.
I mean, it's one of the perks of the job, right?
But it's a perk, but it's a challenge. I mean, it's, you know, there's something like 250,000 books published a year.
Mm-hmm. You get access to books, but you don't get access to any more time as a reader. And especially as a bookstore owner, I think there's this, we can dissuade, I think the three of us can dissuade people right now of the image people have of black books or something where people are sitting behind the counter and reading. I don't get any reading done during the 9 to 6 when I'm at the store. You know, it's all on my own time.
Wow. So that's a lot of reading on your off time then. But even then, are you just reading based on, it's almost like homework. I mean, you're not reading based on necessarily what you would pick up and read then. You're going for, you know, here's the hot book, I should read it. And is that difficult at times?
I think there's some of that. But I think also, I mean, it's your staff, it's your team. I mean, it's, you know, a bookstore is not one voice. I think that's one of the reasons why people love bookstores. Our recommend sections, we have a few, are wildly diverse. And half of the stuff I'm not interested in reading, you know, and that's a good thing because it means that we've got a nice collection of folks who are reading a nice diverse, collection of topics. And I think that's fun for people coming into the store. So I think at some level you have to say, I need help with this.
Completely. I mean, so I just hired my first full-time employee, Matt Shaw, and he's been awesome, but he brings a diversity. He's very a great reader of poetry. And, you know, so he's brought that curation to that section of the inventory, which is exactly like you're saying, you know, relying on staff to do that. And I had an intern this year too, a local student who was really into graphic novels. And so I had him come in and curate a graphic novel section for the store and give me, you know, some tips on how to stock that section. And so it's always a dialogue.
Sounds like a fun job.
Yeah, I think our hope is that the hot books will be the ones that we are recommending to people rather than dictated by some higher power, some co-op bay. Like, no one, I don't think anyone here needs to read James Comey's book to know that it will sell like gangbusters after it comes out tomorrow. So we can put our energy into books that people might not know about otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Since you mentioned that, I do have to ask you, how do you go about preparing for a blockbuster like James Comey's book coming? Like, do you have to scramble to get copies, or how does that work?
Well, I think that's one of the things that's great about the bookselling industry is that you have this incredible support network of publishers and distributors who are on your side and want you to, you know, have those books in stock. And so I'm sure you guys have been getting the same emails I have for the past few weeks from your reps about get ready, get ready. And that's a really, you know, helpful part of figuring out how to make those orders and what's coming down the pipeline. We had a debate about doing a midnight opening.
Like for Harry Potter, but yeah. For James Comey.
James Comey. Yeah.
Were you going to dress up?
Yeah, it could happen.
Well, I'm also curious, you know, we talk about the fact that indie bookstores are doing well in the face of Amazon, but are you thriving, surviving? Like how successful is successful for an indie bookstore?
I think the stats for the industry at large show better than anecdotal examples that things are really going well. There's been, since 2009, there's been a 40% increase in the number of independent bookstores in the country. We're up to like 2,300 or something like that. So coming right out of that through the recession there, all of a sudden this growth that's really kind of unparalleled. And you know, thriving, I guess it depends on how you define it. I think we're all doing well. Books have really razor-thin margins because if you think of retail, they're one of the few products that the price is printed on it. So we have no leeway in terms of pricing or anything like that unless we go down. But yeah, I think that people, as Ari said earlier, were kind of woken up a couple of years ago, and especially after borders closed, that, you know, if you don't support your local bookstore, whether it's a chain or an independent, it won't be there when you want it. And it really showed people how important it was to them as well.
Was there anything else about either online retail or the big box stores or reading things on a Kindle that made them not succeed? Or, I mean, they obviously succeeded, but, you know, why? What were they lacking?
Well, I think that there were two things in the 2003 to 2008 time frame. One was the internet and Amazon. And the other was the Kindle. And both of those had huge sort of pendulum swings of people trying it out. And any one person trying something doesn't have an impact, but when an entire country starts trying something, that puts stores out of business, unfortunately. And that happened with Amazon, and it happened. And then there was a slight swing back, but then it happened. Then the Kindle came out. And when ebooks were priced at 99 cents on Amazon, it was very hard to justify $28 for a hardcover or $17 for a paperback. And a lot of people just started trying ebooks. It was a huge pendulum swing. After the author lawsuit and the publisher lawsuit, when Amazon was no longer able to charge 99 cents, suddenly the value proposition came back a little bit. And I think a lot of people swung back because I don't think that they necessarily liked the experience better. It was just, it was 99 cents, you know, and it was hard to say no to that. And I think that after that kind of 2009, 2010 timeframe when that lawsuit came down, that's when you started seeing people swing back to bookstores, swing back to paper books, not exclusively in independent bookstores, like still ordering from Amazon, but
and right. Now the ebook market has pretty much plateaued. I mean, I think it's less than 20% of total books sold are electronic. And so I think that's just a testament to the fact that there's no replacement for the printed word.
Right.
Bound book.
Okay. Well, thanks. We're going to take a quick break right now. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Holocaust and Human Rights Center of Maine, proud to offer free educational workshops for students and community groups. hhrcmaine.org. And People's United Bank, NA, whose new mobile app helps customers to pay bills and manage accounts from anywhere. peoples.com.
Later today on This American Life, Eileen had to make a choice. Actually, she had to make the choice that is the hardest possible choice a mom could ever have to make.
You just try to think, okay, is this my only choice? What could be the worst that could happen? Could it be any worse than what you're living right now?
Choosing between two bad options when no good options exist. That's later today.
Join us for This American Life this evening at 11 right here on Maine Public Radio. Each week, Saturday afternoons at 5 on Maine Public Classical, From the Top shares the stories and performances of outstanding young classically trained musicians, ages 8 to 18. This October, From the Top will be performing live at Bowdoin College and will be showcasing the best young musicians from throughout Maine. For more information, please visit fromthetop.org/apply. From the Top, great kids, great music.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Today on the program, independent bookstores in Maine. Joining me in our studio, Samantha Haskell. She's the owner of Blue Hill Books. Ari Gerson is owner of Longfellow Books. And Josh Christie is co-owner of Print, a bookstore. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. And on the line with us now is Kenny Breckner. He's the owner of DDG Booksellers in Farmington. That's Duvaney, Doak, and Garrett Booksellers in Farmington. Kenny, welcome to Maine Calling.
Well, thank you so much. I'm pleased to be here.
Well, thanks for joining us. Tell us a little bit about your store.
Well, we are edging up on 28 years here in Farmington. We have a real emphasis on, we're obviously an old-fashioned rural general independent, but we have a real emphasis on children's books here and outreach to schools and libraries in our area.
That's great. And how much of a part of your community are you? Are you right downtown there?
We are right in downtown Farmington. And, you know, in terms of, an example I would give of our being entwined in the community has to do with the state's shortfall in terms of providing financial support to area schools has a tendency to turn communities inward on themselves. Farmington's had some real ugly budget fights of late, and our school library friends have had their budgets halved in the last couple of years. And we've really tried to step into the breach there. We do literacy outreach, bring authors to schools, and have a deserving reader award. But in terms of trying to meet the challenge of the budget problems that we've had here, we've had wish lists for the school libraries. We have a blind date with a book, fundraisers, and most recently we've worked with the wonderful Amy Graham of Cascade Brook School, who's in order to help her get a King grant, which has helped brought STEM books and diverse titles into the classrooms there and into that school library. So we try and put the glue back in the community when it's had some fractures, as we've seen lately.
Okay, and you're sort of in a more rural area of Maine. Is a bookstore some sort of counterbalance to being out there without as much else?
Well, I mean, absolutely it is. I mean, as you know, there's less broadband here and so forth, but people already have a certain amount of isolation, and a lot of times the social isolation involved in online shopping and so forth, and social media needs a strong counterbalance. There's nothing more personal or intimate than reading a physical book. But we really, when people come into a bookstore, we really have a quantum expansion of that by being able to share the love of reading and open up new labyrinths and pathways and unexpected connections with the books by hanging out with us and making those connections. I think we're integral to the rural community here that way.
Well, great, Kenny. Thanks for joining us today. Kenny Breckner is the owner of DDG Booksellers in Farmington. And I just wanted to continue on some of the thoughts we were talking about as far as what makes an independent bookstore sort of appealing to people. And I'm wondering about the sort of physical space. How much matters, you know, there's either the really musty little old place with a cat you have a cat there in Longfellow, don't you, Ari?
We have a carousel of cats.
Okay.
They're always up for adoption.
Not musty, though.
Not musty. Right.
But it does fit some of the stereotypes, but in a good way. How much does it matter as far as whether you offer the comfy couches or beverages or board games? Is that part of what makes an indie bookstore appealing?
I think it matters that you are kind of true to yourselves and your vision of the store. I mean, a big difference between, you would not mistake Longfellow Books for Print for Blue Hill Books, and going into a Borders or an Amazon store or Barnes & Noble now anywhere around the country one of the arguments for them, arguably, is that they'll be exactly the same wherever you go. It's like a McDonald's hamburger tasting exactly the same wherever you go. So I don't think there's necessarily a, you know, musty beats brand new and clean or cozy beats wide open, but making sure that it's, you know, makes sense for your community and your staff and your stock and all those pieces, like any other independent retailer.
Is that the case? Do you need to offer beverages or food?
I don't think you do, but I do think you have to provide the space for people to spend time. Mm-hmm. You can run in, you can grab a book, you can grab a card, you can grab a magazine, but in general, I think the success of independent bookstores is because people enjoy spending time in them. And so I do think that there's an element of how do we make this space warm and inviting? How do we make it comfortable for people to wander and sit down? You know, we've got, you know, we actually opened up a whole corner of the store a year ago to put in a couple of couches. And, you know, when we do have chairs sprinkled around and we do have beanbags in the kids' room. And, you know, it is for us, it is important that people feel there's a way for them to spend time because that's when we get a chance to talk to them. It's when they get a chance to ask us questions. I think it is important. And I think it's something you don't feel in a Barnes & Noble.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I don't think you feel like they want me to stay here for an hour or they would notice if I stayed for an hour. So I think that that is important.
Okay, I think we'll go to a call now from Allison, and she's with one of the bookstores that does offer some of these extras. Allison, you're on the line. What did you want to tell us about your bookstore?
Hi. So I opened Quill Books and Beverage in Westbrook, Maine with my partner Matthew Irving just about a month ago.
Okay, and what do you offer there?
So we have, it's a used bookstore, and we offer beverages like food. We have beer, wine, coffee, sandwiches, and then we also provide a community space. So we have events like board game nights, poetry readings, live music, story time for the kids.
And how's the response been from the community?
It's been pretty good. We're really excited to be in Westbrook because there just before we came, there wasn't that sort of community space that's quieter and that you can like have go to something like a poetry reading or just bring the kids and hang out. And you can drink, but you don't have to drink. And it's been really nice having that community space. And we've gotten a pretty good response from our community.
Well, I can tell you, we put a call out on Facebook for people to mention some of their favorite bookstores, and there were a ton of mentions of your store, Quill Books and Beverage in Westbrook. So thanks, Allison. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
We'll go to Trish now in Cape Elizabeth. Trish, hi. What did you want to talk about?
Hi. I love your callers' bookstores, by the way. I appreciate them having them. I'm wondering if the owners have noticed synergies with how local libraries have had to reinvent themselves to make themselves able to adapt to offering technology, you know, books and literature by technology, and also serving as a community center-focused kind of place as opposed to a repository just of books.
Well, we work with the Portland Public Library a lot, and, you know, they've gone through such a huge transformation over the last few years. And we see, you know, I think it just, you know, from our perspective, anybody that's getting people around books is a good thing. I know there's a lot of folks that are going in for computer usage. There's a lot of folks that are, they're not necessarily there for books, but I think the sort of the partnerships and the relationships that libraries have with bookstores like us, I think in general it has a net positive effect. I don't think it's measurable, but I think it's absolutely positive.
Yeah, it's definitely a symbiotic relationship, you know, cultivating literacy and a, you know, sense of community in both places for sure. And we have an incredible library in Blue Hill that really serves, you know, seven towns on our peninsula, and they've done a lot to become a community space. And for sure, it's you're kind of having to adapt to those changing, sense of what's happening in the place where you are.
Yeah, the changes are really not dissimilar between what libraries are going through and what bookstores are going through, I think. And as you both mentioned, they make natural partners. Often they aren't interested in selling books, which is something that we are all too happy to come in and do, and also don't necessarily have the contacts or the same contacts to bring authors and readers into towns.
Thanks, Trish, for your question. I wanted to, one thing about the tech sort of developments and things you can do, I know that there are some bookstores who are developing these little, not really gimmicks, but attractions of someone can come in with a digital file and get their book actually printed while they're in the store. Are those the kinds of things that you think need to be done in the future to get people coming in, or is that just an extra bonus kind of offering?
I don't think so. I mean, so I know that there's the espresso machines that, you know, where you can get your own book printed, or you can get a lot of, you know, open source books printed. Maybe there will be a day, but I don't think we're close to it yet, where people will want to come in and use a bookstore for printing. They're not inexpensive, and I don't see it as I don't see it as a huge sort of need for independent bookstores right now.
Okay. I'm just going to read a couple comments that we got on Facebook from Kimberly on Facebook. She says, I feel like it's the same as why Toys R Us went out, but independent toy stores have lasted. It's all about the magical experience. Yes, I use the word magical. When you walk in and just browse, you talk to the owner, get a recommendation. They're never wrong. You can pick up the books, flip through them, smell them even. I would be lying if I said I never order books on Amazon, but sometimes it's just easier, but I prefer the physical experience. And then we have another Facebook post from our frequent Maine calling guest, Josh Bodwell. He's with the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. He says, some Saturdays I've walked down the street to Elements, books and coffee and beer in Biddeford, started the day with a coffee and bagel, written until lunch, grabbed a soup or cheese board, kept writing, then ended the day with a beer. Along the way, I often build a stack of books while I work. I've discovered everything from a paperback of Penelope Fitzgerald's gem, The Bookshop, to a hardcover first edition of John Updike's Problems and Other Stories. I call those good days. So again, there's this emphasis on it being a place for people, a very physical, experiential place. So it seems that we had thousands of Facebook posts about those kinds of experiences.
And I think the Toys R Us comment is actually really is meaningful, because, you know, I think it's easy to say it's Amazon. But I don't just think it was Amazon, truthfully. I think if you walked into a Toys R Us in the last 10 years, there wasn't really a lot of heart in them. I don't think it felt like, and I mean, I would buy gifts for my nieces. It didn't really feel like people cared about the toys that you were asking about. And I'm guessing if that had been a priority for Toys R Us, maybe it would be a little different. I don't know. But, you know, and I try to emphasize with my staff, Amazon is not going to be the one that puts us out of business. It's going to be us that puts us out of business. They can sell cheaper, and if that's what somebody wants, that's fine. But I think there's something different about retail, and I think if we all understand that and we all emphasize that, then I don't think that the Amazons of the world can kill it.
Yeah, we've used the word experiential a couple times, but another really important word for independent bookstores is discovery, which is something that both of your commenters kind of spoke to. Mm-hmm. The idea that, like, as Ari was kind of saying, and I completely agree, like, if you want something quick and fast and you know exactly what it is, there's not many delivery systems more effective than Amazon. You have to make peace with a lot about their business practices, which are bad, but, you know, it can get you something really fast. But discovering a book that you didn't know you wanted, like Josh was saying about finding them at Elements, or people find with our staff picks, as we were saying earlier, or just by browsing through our shelves, that's something that's almost impossible to replicate on a site like Amazon, because it is such a narrowing experience there. It's leading you towards a particular product, where we are more of an opening experience. We're trying to give you this broad spectrum of things to look at.
Yeah, and also I think just being a physical space that sells books and has books on the shelf, I mean, books are such an incredible platform for conversation about ideas, about the past, the future, current events, about arts and letters, culture. You know, it sparks this real energy in that space that is so separate and so different from the one-dimensional experience of shopping online, staring at a screen, you know. And so I think I think certainly that is what contributes to the vitality of small stores.
And I think that's why people feel good about it. They, you know, they almost feel like they're doing a good service or a good deed if they buy a book at a local bookstore.
They should. I mean, I think the statistics about Amazon and sales tax are staggering. I mean, from the American Booksellers Association in 2015, they avoided $700 million in sales tax and an estimated $11 million in Maine alone. And so customers should feel good about shopping at their local stores.
Yeah, as we approach tax day here, and my compatriots out here have all just paid our business taxes to the state for the year, our communities are seeing a direct impact of that. And our communities are also seeing a direct impact of these sales that are occurring that there is no sales tax collected for.
Okay, well, we're going to take another break. A word about tomorrow's show first, though. Join me for a conversation about foraging in Maine. Foraging is more than just picking some wild mushrooms or greens growing in our backyard. We'll hear from some experts on where and how to best forage. Share your comments and questions. Email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet us, or post to our Facebook page. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the World Affairs Council, connecting Maine and the world with international speakers and global topics. Learn more at wacmaine.org. And Norris, helping businesses and schools stay safe through engineered security, life safety, and emergency communication systems. NorrisInc.com.
On the next Fresh Air, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Lawrence Wright. He's written books about Al-Qaeda and Scientology. His latest is about his home state of Texas, why he left as a young man, what brought him back, and what makes it special. His new book is called God Save Texas, A Journey into the Soul of the Lone Star State. Join us.
And you can join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock right here on Maine Public Radio. Coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock, we'll have World Affairs, Russian interference in elections here and in Europe, the rise in fake news, and a decline in citizen trust worldwide pose a danger. A look at the role of social media and the ways in which it has been exploited for the purpose of sowing distrust. That's World Affairs, coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock, right here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, how independent bookstores are doing in an age of online shopping and big box stores. Joining me in our studio, Josh Christie. He's a co-owner of Print, a bookstore. Ari Gerson is owner of Longfellow Books. And Samantha Haskell is owner of Blue Hill Books. Join our conversation. Give us a call. Our number is 1-800-399-3566, and we will go to a call now from Chris calling in Camden. Hi, Chris. You're on the line.
Hi. How you doing?
Fine. Hi. How? What did you want to talk about as far as books go?
Well, first of all, I wanted to say hi to Ari and Josh. I've been in both of their stores. I'm an author, illustrator of children's picture books, and in fact, I'm sitting at my drawing table right now waiting for paint to dry on an illustration that will be in a book that will probably be at all your stores in about a year from now. So
is this Chris Van Dusen?
It is.
Okay, great. So now we know who we're talking to.
Hi, guys. Samantha, I have not had the pleasure of being at your store, but hopefully we'll fix that soon.
Yeah, you have an open invitation. You're one of our favorite authors.
No, thanks. Thanks. But I just wanted to kind of mention that not only are indies great for consumers, but they're also really great for the other side of the business, which is the producers, the creators of the books, because I've been to both Print and Longfellow and had great success there. And not only do they promote the books, but they hand sell the books. And they have us in there for signings, and so we would be lost without the indies from our side of the business. So I just want to thank you guys for being there and for having us at your stores and for selling our books, because we really appreciate it.
Well, great. I think we would thank you for writing and drawing the books, Chris. This is Ari. It's an honor just to have you as one of our main heroes. And I will tell folks, on April 28th, which is Independent Bookstore Day, and everybody should go to their independent bookstore on that day, Chris has agreed to a draw-off with one of our local Portland illustrators, Scott Nash. So it's going to be early. It's going to be at 9 o'clock. But we're going to once and for all find out who's Who's the better illustrator? Kids will be able to pick the drawings, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So, Chris, I assume that you're practicing.
I am practicing, yeah, because Scott's going to take me down.
You're in training, I hope. Exactly.
It's a throwdown.
I know Scott's training right now, so.
I know.
Well, great, Chris.
Getting back to the sketchbook. I also want to give a shout-out to my local bookstore up here in Camden, the Owl and Turtle, who have fairly new owners, and it's a great store. Again, it's sort of a destination for people visiting Mid-Coast area, and so a shout-out to Maggie and Craig White at the Owl and Turtle.
Great, Chris. Thank you, and good luck on that draw-off or throwdown or whatever it's called. Thanks for calling. And I did want to mention Independent Bookstore Day. It's April 28th every year. Is that
it's the last Saturday of April every year.
And what do you guys have something planned for that? Any exciting events, or you've got the
Well, I mean, we're pitting Scott and Chris against each other. I mean, that's, you know, and a room full of kids screaming.
What more do you need?
Yeah, exactly.
It's as exciting as it gets.
Like Record Store Day and Free Comic Book Day, as Independent Bookstore Day has grown, they've created a bunch of unique products that only independent bookstores can sell on those days and only in their physical stores, not even on our websites. So you have to come into a store to get them, which include signed collections, new collections of stories, literary swag like prints and bags and tea towels and stuff like that. So we're going to have a big stock of those to celebrate on Independent Bookstore
Day. Sounds great. Okay, we're going to go to another call now. Larry in Bangor. Larry, you're on the line. What did you want to ask our guests?
Hi. Back in the Jurassic period when I was a boy, librarian's function was to tell me to be quiet, and I used to find refuge in the local bookstore. And I would find books printed in, 1940-something, even before I was born. And what I'm wondering is this. I hear... read, whatever you want to call it, that if a book isn't popular, the publisher calls it back, grinds it up, and makes a new book out of it. And in particular, I'm wondering, you know, I stumbled across To Kill a Mockingbird before Gregory Peck made it famous. And, Carper Lee wrote a book before that. I'm trying to remember, it's a biblical phrase, Tell a Watchman or something. And it's been canned. But I very much enjoyed it, and remembering what I read in The Mockingbird, I could see how Atticus would be the gentleman portrayed in the first original book. And I'm wondering how I would find that book if they're grinding them up, because it's, like I said, the book canned by an awful lot of people, even though I liked it. And what do you do with a book like that? Do you send it back and let them grind it up, or do you keep it?
Well, I don't think we get to decide what they do with it after we send it back.
Right. Yeah, one of the great things about independent bookstores as to a lot of other retail is we buy our stock. Most stores buy their stock on a returnable basis, which means that when things have not sold or the paperback of a hardcover is coming out, we can send them back to a publisher. But I don't think that their fate is necessarily to be ground up. A lot of books get called what is remaindered, which means they go out into the market again at a much lower price. If you ever go to stores and see those big tables out front with the little black marks on the spine, those are remaindered books. Sometimes after we return them, they go out again to wholesalers or to other stores, and now exists in traditional retail and online and other places a much greater secondary market. So once a book is out there, it's much harder for me to conceive, at least, of them all going back somewhere and then being summarily executed like that.
Okay, thank you, Larry, for your question. We're going to go to Reeve in New Hampshire calling in. Hi, Reeve.
Hi. I thank you for taking a New Hampshire call. I boycott Amazon. I buy all of my books from an independent bookseller, and I'm devoted to them. But my question is that here in Wolfboro, New Hampshire, we have a long, long, long-term independent, wonderful bookstore whose owner is retiring. And how do we go about, I mean, it would be a tragedy for me to lose this. How do we go about locating people who, you know, are happy to move to this gorgeous small tourist town and...
I'm sorry, we're going to go to Kenny, if you're listening, were you able to answer Reeve's question?
It blanked out for a second, but he was asking about bringing somebody in from outside. I mean, there are a few options. First is, if you have any prestigious authors who are community-minded, there's been a fun trend of authors like Ann Patchett and others, Louise Erdick and others have kind of stepped up and not wanted to see a bookstore leave their community and have worked either buying into an existing store. Jeff Kinney did that as well, or others, to try and rally around and provide some ownership into that situation. There are also been options of having shares into the community to have a community-owned business, a community-owned bookstore come into being in that environment. You really have to look at your resources locally, put it onto a town meeting as an agenda item, or ask for some newsletter outreach, or write an editorial in the local paper and just try and really do what you would do within the bookstore, which is to talk it out and troubleshoot and see what's out there in your community to help make that happen.
Okay, Kenny, he's with DDG Booksellers. He just was back on the line to answer that question. Thanks, Kenny. We just have a little more time, so I wanted to quickly get into what's selling or what you guys recommend. Are there certain books, are there categories of books right now that you're seeing a lot of interest in your stores right now? Political, James Comey?
Political books have, there is a season for them. The half-life on them seems very short compared to in the past. If you look at like Michael Wolff's book, which was the last book that Macmillan put out that was as big of a news thing because the president was tweeting about it over and over and over again. That was really big. This month has been a really big month for us in terms of poetry because it's National Poetry Month. So part of that is us creating displays and kind of driving sales, but also people coming in and looking for poetry. And I think it speaks to Portland being a foodie town that cookbooks have been a really strong section for us as well.
Oh, that's great. What about you, Samantha? Anything you're seeing as in demand?
Yeah, I mean, I would second that. I think the political discourse in bookstores is pretty strong. It's an opportunity for people to come in and talk about, the topic at hand with any given book that's come out. But we're a pretty strong store in terms of just literary fiction. So those are always kind of the titles that I keep an eye on. And then we also have a pretty sizable mystery section, so there's some new mysteries out.
Do you have personal favorites?
Ooh, yeah. I mean, the new mystery that I have at the top of my stack right now is called Tangerine. I know I have it with me. The blurb on the front says, as if Donna Tartt, Gillian Flynn, and Patricia Highsmith had collaborated on a screenplay to be filmed by Hitchcock. Ooh. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a good one.
Great. Ari, do you have any top picks for us to hear about?
Well, there's a book that came out last week called Country Dark, which we're going to try to sell as many as we can. It's phenomenal. It's Chris Offit, and he hasn't written a novel in like 20 or 25 years. It takes place in Kentucky in Appalachia, and it's it is written exactly as it should be, and the story is just what it should be, and it's really just kind of perfect.
What about children's books? That's something that people really do come to indie bookstores for because they want to sit there and read them with their kids. Are there any that right now that are topping the list?
Well, a upcoming one for us is Julie Filatko, who is a South Portland author who did a book called Snapsy the Alligator and then a follow-up to that, which were picture books. She's got her first kind of middle grade early reader book about two dogs in a drench coat coming out at the end of May, if I'm not mistaken. And we'll be doing an event with her on May 29th for that book.
Good. Anybody else have any favorites that you've just read for the heck of it that you enjoyed?
I haven't read kids' books recently. I mean, Circus Ship by Chris Van Dusen is just perennially at the top of our bestseller list. And then, the McCloskey books are always going to be up at the top of that list. It seems like the YA books are getting slightly less end of the world-ish.
Now that we're living in it.
That's the funny thing. Now it's time to tone it down a little bit. I think that's a good trend to be honest, because it was getting hard to keep recommending these YA books that just are all about the apocalypse and the end of the world and this dystopic kind of future.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we're going to squeeze in one more call here to Gibran? Sorry, I'm not sure how to say it, but in Bangor. Hi, you're on the line.
It's Gibran.
Okay.
But I'll answer to anything.
Okay. What did you want to tell us about Gibran?
Well, I'm the owner of the Briar Patch in Bangor. We've been around for just over 30 years, primarily as a children's bookstore, although since the other bookstore in our downtown closed due to retirement, we've expanded to carry a lot more grown-up books as well, which has been an interesting adventure when you've been immersed in children's books for so long. But things are going well here. And what I wanted to add to the general conversation was what I've loved best, if I've only owned the store for just over a year, is the community of bookselling in this state. Everybody who you have on the program, everybody who's called in, who owns a store, I mean, honestly, the ability to meet and learn from all of them has been one of the best parts of owning a bookstore, an independent bookstore in Maine. And that sort of community, you can't get that from, you know, really a big box environment or an online retailer. You know, you can't, you know, start out on your own and really, you know, touch base with, you know, people at Amazon. How do you do it? You can do that with everybody who's been on the program today. And that's been wonderful, as well as the independent small press as well. The book companies that are publishing great books, as well as the authors that are here in this state. You know, I'm talking about like Islandport Books and Tilbury. I mean, they're fantastic partners in bringing great new titles to the front of our stores and in comers' hands. And I'm really thankful that we've got everybody involved that makes bookselling in Maine so phenomenal.
Well, thank you, Gibran. I know your bookstore also got a lot of shout-outs on our Facebook page. People really love it. So thank you for your call. And I did want to ask about that. Do you guys know how many bookstores, independent bookstores, there are in Maine? Is there a number?
I don't know off the top of my head, but there is a number. The New England Independent Booksellers Association is the regional trade association for independent bookstores. Actually, it was a meeting I was at with Gibran last week, with Matt as well from Blue Hill Books, and Ellen Richmond from the Children's Bookseller, and a bunch of folks from Hello Hello Books and other stores in Maine. And I know on their website the heading for each state, so it'd be very easy to count, although I don't know it off the top of my head.
Right. So again, from the response we got from people, sounds like every little town in Maine has a beloved bookstore. So that's probably going to be it for our conversation today. Samantha, Ari, Josh, thank you all for joining us today. Samantha Haskell's owner of Blue Hill Books, Ari Gerson is the owner of Longfellow Books, and Josh Christie is co-owner of Print, a bookstore. Nikki Shields ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives, by visiting mainecalling.org. Today's show will be rebroadcast again tonight at 8. And tomorrow on the program, we'll learn all about foraging in Maine. I'm Cindy Hahn. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.